Hi, listeners. If you enjoyed our recent episode on LGBTQIA+ relationships, check out an upcoming conversation with previous On Our Minds hosts Noah, Zion, and Matt, and other youth filmed live in Detroit. It's called LGBTQIA Youth, Finding Well-Being, and it's streaming May 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Find more info at Student Reporting Labs on Instagram.
From PBS NewsHour Student Reporting Labs,
and WETA.
This is On Our Minds
with Ashley
and Tyler,
a podcast about the teenage experience made by teenagers for teenagers.
Because we all need a place to feel heard.
Hi, Tyler. How are you?
Hey, Ashley. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm actually really happy that we're doing this episode today because it's about a topic that a lot of people might not necessarily know super well. Unless, of course, it pertains to them, and that is foster care and adoption. These are two circumstances that can really affect a young person's mental health, which is why it's so important.
Yeah, I mean, I was searching online and I found out that up to 80% of children in the foster care system have significant mental health issues, which that's compared to about 18 to 22% of the general population. And basically what that means is that if you're a foster child, you're about four times as likely to experience mental health challenges, such as depression or anxiety or stress disorders.
Yeah, that statistic is really staggering, but I guess it also can make sense because, to my understanding, foster care can be a very difficult system to navigate. So we actually received an audio story from a student producer named Juan, and at his school, there are three brothers who are all in foster care, each in different homes and situations. Juan is joining us now to help introduce us to the conversation he had with the brothers. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Ashley. Hi, Tyler. Good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Could you tell us a little bit more about how this conversation came to be?
Yeah, so one day I was just sitting in my class with my teacher, and we were talking about how to help me get out of a little situation I'm in the foster care system. And I remember that my friends, George, Sean, they have another younger brother as well. His name is Blake. They're all in separate, different like environments. We have George in independent living. We have Sean in a group home, and we have the youngest brother, Blake, in a foster home. And we're pretty much sharing their story on how they are able to stay connected and how it affects their life in school.
We should let listeners know that names have been changed just to protect their brother's identity. So Juan, how did recording a conversation with them go?
Yeah, we recorded for almost 2 hours. There was a lot to talk about, and it was hard to choose what parts to play on this episode, but let's start with Sean talking about how it was like to enter the foster care system. Then we'll hear George and Blake share their experiences.
Mentally, I was dealing with a lot because it felt so surreal that every single last one of our siblings that was with us are in foster care spread out during the whole state. And I went upstairs and just sat there and crying and yelling and stuff because I didn't want to be there. It made me mad that it happened. It made me sad. It was so much stuff that I almost failed eighth grade. Like, I completely failed eighth grade. I know that. That's why I had to get my credits up. And for ninth grade, I was still dealing with that because COVID hit and being in the house all day because people sick. Because the way it affected me, I just didn't care. I just wanted to go to sleep every time I got up and just did nothing. Once I moved out of there and went somewhere else, I had to realize I am like 15. I'm turning 16 the next year. I have to really change. I'm going to high school. I know I have like anger problems sometimes or stuff that get me mad quick.
When I got into foster care, it was the opposite from Sean in the sense that I kind of disassociated, like, oh, going into the door. Everything did not hit me at all because everything just happened so fast. And my feelings and the way that I thought about it, I kept it to me. It's really hard to reflect and reminisce about that time. I'm not going to lie. I feel like to an extent, I probably was numb. My brain wouldn't allow me to even like care too much. Like I care about the family and I cared about what happened, but I just couldn't cry.
Dealing with my foster mom, if I get into a conflict with her, what I do is I'll just show her that I'm upset or whatever. I'll just stay in my room for a few days doing nothing. I won't even eat. Go downstairs and clean up either because she's really big on cleaning. And I'll just show her, no, I'm not going to do that. She'll get really mad to the point where she will threaten me that I'll get kicked out the house. And so, yeah, I just freeze.
So what do you do to cope with the emotions that you have in the house?
What I do to cope, really, I don't stay in the house anymore. I go out places like track after school programs and stuff.
I agree with Blake. Like, some days, I'm not going to lie, I would act like I was working just to be out with my friends. And that just goes to show how much we did not like to be just sitting in the house. It's bad energy to me. It always has been. But now it's better to really love being at home. I think that's really the root of it. Like, in order to really thrive, you have to love being at the area that you are living in. If you don't love it, then how can you ever be successful, you know?
That speaks words, you know? What about you, Sean?
I'm in a room with, like, two dudes, and it's, like, it's weird because you can't, like, be to yourself. So I have headphones, and I put on, I just listen to music, and I just think, like, and do, like, get my work done or just get hop on a game or something, like, ignoring everybody.
Do you guys ever, like, meet up outside of school? Like, you know, like, hey, what's up, brother? Like, let's go do something, or let's go to the park, or, like, anything?
Yeah. We go out and hang out places a lot. It helps spread the family's energy in a way and further make us more connected spiritually and mentally. Mentally, definitely, because there's been times before where we weren't really connected at all. Simply because when you get into a moment of like strife between your siblings, you begin to see it differently and understand how every single last one of us are just traumatic people.
Yeah.
And we project our traumas onto each other. And when I really noticed that, I'm like, wow, like that's literally what it is. And we're just arguing over nothing. But until the time that we actually started talking and communicating about real things between each other, that's when we really began to see it for what it is and become more like accustomed to learning who we are again. That to me is the best way to really like reconcile relationships.
Yeah. And sometimes like foster parents, they don't understand that. They think, oh, they just a rebellious child. They like, they just mad for no reason, blah, blah, blah. They don't understand it comes with like the trauma you went through and like where you are now. Like it's affecting you still because you're growing mentally and physically still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you can share with other foster care, like children, what's some advice you could give them?
I know like this is probably gonna sound bogus, but try to stay level headed because a lot of things in this system will get you heated like very quickly. And like staying level headed and just waiting for things to go your way would be. Be the best.
You must have patience. I mean, all of us, like every single last one of us, we've been mad at the system for something. But if you have good pattern sense, you'll know that getting mad and lashing out isn't going to help anything. They're just going to keep punishing you because they're going to see you as a rebellious and mad young kid.
Yeah, but also speak too. Also speak.
But I was very shy and I didn't want to say anything. But once you see that people will respect you more when you say what you want, then you'll keep doing it. Like, I'm not saying, like, ask for anything and everything. Don't be spoiled about it. But if you, in your heart, feel like you have to say something, then, hey, say it. Because it's going to be the only way that it truly manifests as something instead of build inside of you. And you boiling, like, with all of those thoughts does not help. Like, it's better to really just share them.
Recently, with all my issues that I'm currently going through right now, with the foster care system, it's taking a toll on me and my education. How are you guys able to keep your grades up?
Like, a lot of stuff can hit deep. Like, your mind would be on that one situation the whole time you're at school.
Yeah.
And you can't get work done. You can't focus enough. So what I usually do is, like, ignore everything, get my work done, because that's my priority of being there first. I will get everything done. And then once I come back, I will deal with that stuff later.
Some things do interrupt my work time, whatever. Say I got to meet a caseworker at school, they'll just ask me the same questions and it interrupts my work time usually. That's the only problem I have, really.
One thing that really helped me is to realize that we all, like every single last one of us, go through different things. Like even me and my problems, and this helped when I started meditating. Perspective is real big when you begin to meditate because you sit outside of yourself, your ego. And a lot of other people have different problems.
And meditation is actually really good. I've only done it one time, and that was the most peace I've done. So I should really start putting it into a routine.
You should.
How would you improve the foster care system?
They should, like, in order to change, I feel like they should get the opinions of the new kids. Make surveys on stuff they should do better.
They need to give us more freedom.
They don't get paid enough to really care enough to change. Right. And plus, most of the people we work with are, like, at the bottom. And they don't really have a say themselves.
What are your dreams? What are your hopes after the foster care system?
After I get out of the foster system, after all of it, I want to get my family united again and have wealth like under that, because we've always grown up in poverty, the lowest of situations. I mean, we've seen it all.
I agree on that for real. One of the good things about foster care is that I can go into a college and they will pay for majority of it. So I'm going to take advantage of that and go to college And also, when I get a little older, if I have a stable apartment and stable, I would try to adopt like one of my siblings.
Coming into foster care really helped us realize how much we need each other and how much our energy together is really just like the foundation of everything, like real love.
Yeah.
Thank you, Juan, for that conversation. You know, coming out of that story, could you share how the conversation has helped or stayed with you over time?
I actually, for one, learned that trauma from the foster care system really plays a big role in foster children's lives.
First of all, thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for feeling comfortable enough to share with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, a piece that you produced, Ashley.
Yeah, so I spoke with my friend Jewel, who was in the foster care system in China and then was adopted to the US by a white American couple. And so this was my first time recording, scripting, and editing on my own, which was definitely an experience. I actually really, really enjoyed it, and I'm glad that I'm able to help share Jewel's story with you guys. Jewel, I met you last year when we competed against each other at the state finals for speech and debate. You gave a really impactful speech about your own adoption story and also criticizing the way that we not only speak about adoption, but also the whole industry. I thought your speech was absolutely incredible.
Thank you for all of the sweet comments. As you said, I do speech and debate, and I'm an East Asian adoptee, so I was adopted from China when I was 2 years old.
What's your adoption story?
I started out in China, and I ended up in the foster care system. And I'm not sure how I got there specifically, but yeah, I had a foster mom. And then my parents tell me that they adopted my sister first and then wanted my sister to have a sister. So they came back for me roughly a year after they adopted her. And now here I am. And I'm here in Northwest Ohio.
How would you personally describe your culture?
That's a hard question. So I've grown up around white people in a white community, in a white suburb, because my parents are white. When I was growing up, especially in elementary school, I obviously looked different. I was like the only Asian kid besides my sister and like one other kid maybe who was older than us. And I also didn't have like a Chinese community. I didn't grow up with those customs, and I didn't grow up with their traditions or with Chinese parents or anything, or with any Chinese friends. So yeah, I feel like there's like this division, and I'm kind of in a limbo in between.
Thank you for sharing again. And also, if you ever want to come over for New Year's once you're here, you are always welcome.
I've never experienced a Chinese New Year. When I was still like a toddler before I got into elementary school, they had this little group where they would kind of teach our parents some of our language and some customs and stuff, and have us do like parent-child activities and whatever to try to get, you know, adoptive parent and adoptee closer together.
How can adoptive families account for cultural differences when adopting? And ethically, should adoptive families adopt children from ethnic backgrounds that they're unfamiliar with if they don't intend on familiarizing themselves with them?
I should definitely preface by saying, like, these are obviously only my personal subjective experiences, and there are millions of adoptees who might disagree with me, I don't know, but it needs to start with education. They need to educate themselves on the history of the birthplace of the adoptee. They also need to understand at least a little bit of adoption and adoption trauma. If you're a person of color and you're transplanted into a white community, like that is really, it's a psychologically hard thing to go through. They need to be there for them. They can't blame their kid for the emotional stuff, I guess, that they're going through as a result of, maybe this is dramatic, but kind of really being ripped away from their original community and placed into a new one. Yeah, stuff like that.
One thing I love about speech people is that they'll say the most like eloquent, incredible piece of like speech. And they're like, oh, I don't know, maybe just something like that. But thank you.
Yeah. Definitely something that I don't want, like, when I talk about this stuff, I think the knee-jerk reaction is that adoptive parents especially think I am insulting them or targeting them or attacking them. I don't think really anybody besides adoptees themselves understand or even talk about how hard it is. Like, I haven't even gotten into all of the problems with birth certificates and how hard it is to access your original birth certificate, because those can literally be overwritten and locked. And also medical history, because I don't know my medical history. I don't know my birth parents' medical history. Like, I don't have access to that. So that is a really huge problem that also doesn't get talked about, just how much adoptees don't know about themselves.
Thank you. And I appreciate you letting me in and letting me be able to see even just a fraction of the things that you experience in your everyday.
I just wanted to ask, like, isn't your mom is from China?
Yeah, I'm a second generation immigrant.
Do you feel like this has given you like a new perspective or gratitude about your own family situation, or?
I kind of talked about it with Jewel, and I'm a little sad that I had to cut out some of that conversation, but Jewel and I were both born while the one-child policy in China was active. And so one thing that my mom says to me is that sometimes I'll ask her, I'll be like, oh, what do you think life would have been like if you had stayed in China? And she was like, oh, you wouldn't have been born. And I was like, that's fair, because I wouldn't have. And so there's definitely a trend if you look at historically, like, the babies who are in foster care and orphanages in China, the vast majority of them are girls. And so I think that having a talk with Jewel kind of made me, I guess, more aware of kind of the things that I might take for granted. A lot of the times I'm like, oh, well, I don't really get to experience a lot of Chinese culture because I live in an area that doesn't have a lot of Chinese people and just doesn't have a lot of API people in general. But I at least have like an environment where I can experience it in my everyday life.
I think it's so good to hear her perspective and learn about, you know, their relationship or how they feel their lack of relationship with their birth culture, you know, has impacted them and how that makes them feel. But it's really important to understand that, like, nobody's going to have the same kind of situation or relationship. A student producer actually named Nat interviewed her friend Alex about being adopted from Guatemala and how his parents tried to keep him connected to his birth culture.
Hey, Alex, thank you for sitting down to talk with me today.
You're welcome, Matt.
So we've been friends for about 2 years now, and I really wanted to speak with you about your adoption process. My dad is biracial and was adopted into a white family from a young age, but I wanted to talk to you about your experience with this. When were you adopted?
I was adopted when I was 9 months old, and I don't remember any of the process, but I was adopted from Guatemala. I was born in Guatemala City, although my family lives in Santa Lucia.
Growing up, how open was your family about this adoption process?
So my parents, from a young age, really wanted me to understand that although I am different, I'm still their part of their family. So they started me off really with books and also just kind of telling me about my biological mom. They didn't just want me to know that I was adopted. They also wanted me to know about my culture that I was not taken from, but just wasn't going to be able to be exposed to it in person for a while. I think I was 8 the first time I went to Guatemala. And then every year up until I was 13, 14, the first year I remember we were able to buy my siblings school supplies, and I was able to be in the markets there in Santa Lucia. I was able to finally experience what I've seen on the internet. I've been able to experience going to the temple, which the Maya temples are really cool. One thing that my parents have always tried to show me is the art. That's because the art tells so much about the culture. Also, the cuisine. My parents really tried to make sure that I had a diverse palate.
Can I ask, what's your favorite Guatemalan dish?
My favorite dish is pepian de pollo, which is a chicken soup that I don't know what they do to it. It's just the best chicken soup that I've had.
Well, Alex, I want to thank you again for having the time to sit down and talk with me about your heritage today.
We only have one full episode left.
And it's a good one for the end of school or the beginning of summer. It's an episode all about nature.
You could even listen to it while sitting outside in the sunshine.
Or on a walk.
Or at the beach, if that is geographically relevant to you.
Or at the mall, if they have plants.
Today's segments were produced by Juan from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Ashley from Columbus, Ohio. That's you.
Woo, that is me. Nat from St. Charles, Missouri.
This episode was produced by lead podcast producer Bridget Gansky and edited by Mercedes Izeji.
Editorial director Marie Kusig and executive producer Leah Klatman.
Theme music by Jackson Tiedens.
Additional music by Blue Dot Sessions.
On Our Minds is supported by the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations.
If you or someone you know needs help, we have a list of resources at studentreportinglabs.org/mentalhealthresources.